This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
Hi, this is Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. And I'd like to welcome my former co-host, Connie Goodell Newton, who was the original co-host of this show. Welcome back, Connie.
Thanks, Bob. It's great to be back.
And Bobby Silver, a local entrepreneur, one of the owners of Yellow Brick Pizza.
That's right.
Good. And they've been really active on a key issue in this community, the mass evictions at the Bryden House. And let me talk a little about the history of the Bryden House. I was actually involved with my, she wasn't my wife then, but my wife, Suzanne Patzer. And Suzanne was involved in making the video. I was, when I ran for Congress in 1992, I was endorsed by the AFL-CIO. And they were the ones, as a training program, that brought the Bryden House back. And part of the notion was to get loans from the AFL-CIO in Washington. So Suzanne made a tape. We got to go into the Bryden House. It was boarded up. And it was being used primarily by junkies, primarily people smoking crack. And there was a huge advancement. We felt we needed something for the elderly in our neighborhood, people who were disabled and elderly. And a 30-year agreement was signed to keep the Bryden House for elderly people, for people who were elderly and disabled. So, 22 years in, all the agreements now appear to be broken. They've been released. You know, some agency out of Ohio, somehow the original agreement, and there appears to be what are mass evictions. Is that the case? Both of you were down there today. You've been meeting on it. What's going on, Bobby?
Well, pretty much what you've described, and then after, you know, after we read the Dispatch article and actually went down there and found out that it was kind of even worse than we had thought, and that there was even more evictions happening than we had thought, because we thought maybe between 30 and 60, and it turned out that it was 90. And then just, you know, after talking to the residents, some of the tactics they're using, intimidation tactics, you know, it's none of it is legal, and a lot of it is, you know, just really aggressive to people's psyches, especially people with psychiatric needs that are in there. People that can not absolutely not help themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, Connie, you're an attorney. If what Bobby's saying, well, I'm an attorney as well, but if I, in fact we're law partners, if what Bobby's saying is true, isn't there a possibility of some countersuits if they're mass evicting people? Many of these people handicapped, many of these people with problems, and we know, of course, that when elderly people and people with disabilities are relocated forcibly, that there's a high rate of illness and, in some cases, death that results from that.
Yeah, Bob. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on that's very questionable. A lot of people have received eviction notices, and some of them appear to be at different stages of the eviction. It's really, it's not clear whether the landlords are following the proper process. In fact, it seems like there are intimidation tactics. One resident claimed that people have been threatened with arrest if they are still present tomorrow after their 30-day notices have expired. And so that would be considered a self-help eviction if the landlord is not going through the proper court process and the eviction process. in addition to claims for a self-help eviction, if that exists, it does seem like there are certain disability rights that need to be respected, and besides the legal aspects of it, just what they're doing to people who are some of the most vulnerable people in our community is just so unpalatable and reprehensible. And the management has been described by residents as really mean, that they're very intimidating, you know. And so these really are some of the most vulnerable members of our community. They're low-income people with mental and physical disabilities. There are people in wheelchairs that we visited today. You know, the elderly. One resident told us about a neighbor lady who had already passed away and died because of her health conditions impacted by the stress of the living environment. Mm-hmm. Bob, what we've learned is that it seems like the new ownership, the new owners have been basically renovating the building while people are still living there and taking away privileges from the residents. There was a common dining hall where churches and social service agencies would come in and bring food. Mm-hmm. They served lunch at the dining hall in Bryden House, and they've stopped those services.
Yeah, and any other services coming in also. The last service was stopped. They were working with the church, and that stopped in 2015. So there's absolutely no aid coming in anymore. And when we were there, you know, it's odd to have somebody, you know, a lot of disabled, handicapped people all sort of warning us about if the management sees us there, how aggressive they're going to be.
Well, you know, here's my thought. We ought to be invited in by these people. We'd be invited. I relish the opportunity to be arrested by these people. I would consider it an honor. And not only that, they better not be security guards. They better bring down the police, because their security guards, if they have them, I don't know who they're using, if they're using police or security guards, have no right whatsoever to touch me. And people have a right to self-defense. So, you know, I understand the laws. I've been in this situation many times. But you cannot isolate these people. You cannot. They have a right to invite people in, including their attorneys, including community supporters. And I'm more than willing. I spent decades in these situations. I think these people need to be challenged. What I find somewhat interesting here, Bobby, is it's one of the owners of the Yellow Brick Pizza, that it would seem like a lot of the businesses would want these elderly, less mobile people in wheelchairs thrown out and to bring in these new upscale yuppies so they could come down and purchase stuff. But here you are, you know, on the side of the less fortunate. How would you explain that to our listeners? I think it's quite admirable.
Well, I mean, you know, there's more to life than money. There's life.
But this is gentrification, right? And you've seen this before with, you know, let's build a huge brand new building and shoehorn a bunch of people in it at prices that will force people out of the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it was up to me, nothing would change. I've been in the neighborhood since 93, 94, and, you know, I was fine with it then, to be quite honest. But, you know, it is nice that it's safer now, and there is definitely pluses to things picking up. But there's also a lot that comes with that, and there's also a responsibility that comes. I feel like that is not often addressed. You know, I don't know what the answers are. I'm just interested and trying to help in whatever way I can. So, if there was more regulations, if we were to be able to create a land trust, you know, I'm not sure what it is, but you know, as we go on further from this point, you know, it's the situation is, we're only going to have more situations that are like this. Mm-hmm. And if we don't do something about it now, then there's going to be a lot of people being displaced that, you know, unnecessarily, and you know, there's going to be a lot of problems, and you know, we're all busy people but this stuff doesn't take a lot of time and doesn't take a lot of energy just to reach out and try to help people, especially, you know, people that are suffering, that can't help themselves.
Yeah, these are the most vulnerable. And Connie, you know, both you and I are homeowners in the neighborhood, and our office is here. The legal situation here, I was a bit upset that legal aid said that it all appeared to be legal. This seems like they've got to be abusing some Handicap Rights Act or Americans with Disabilities Act. If what you were saying is true, isn't there a possibility of counter lawsuits against the people that own that building?
I would think so. It looks like people are at different stages of the eviction, and so some of the evictions may be done legally in terms of, you know, that they're giving them certain notice and things like that. But it really looks like the management is looking for any excuse they can come up with to evict people. So, for instance, today we met a man who had always had his electricity paid for by either a program or it went through his rent.
Right.
And then the new management told him, you need to get the electricity put in your name, otherwise you'll be evicted. And
why?
So they began.
Why would he have to put it in his name if it's being paid by a government program because he's low interest? I mean, that seems like a pretense from a speculator,
right,
who wants to evict the most vulnerable people in the community so he can rip off a whole new group of gentrified yuppies moving in.
From the activist perspective or from the neighbor's perspective, it really does appear that they're just trying to evict people who may be considered less desirable residents so that they can raise the rent, charge twice as much, and bring in, you know, a student population or a more middle-class population. Let me tell you a little bit about the group that has formed in response to this. After a Dispatch article came out about what was happening at Bryden House, a Facebook group of neighbors formed. Bobby and I, quite a few other people joined and started talking about this and meeting. We met at Carabar a few times to talk about this. And, so it's really just people who, neighbors who have been concerned about this issue and the issue of gentrification in general. And we're also neighbors who, you know, we look around in Old Town East and we see people who are living their lives, minding their own business, you know, going about their lives. And, for my part, I'm very happy to live in a diverse neighborhood where all of my neighbors get along, we look out for each other. It doesn't matter what color your skin is. Everybody on my street, we all talk to each other. So we have black, white, straight, gay neighbors all living in harmony together, and I love the diversity of the neighborhood. And so, you know, to see people come in and try to change the character of the neighborhood is just appalling. I've had neighbors who have lived in our neighborhood for 40 years, and we all look out for each other. And so, you know, we're trying to look out for our neighbors here. And so that's what our group of neighbors is about.
And in a way, it could be, you know, it sounds like some of this stuff is going to be inevitable, but, you know, so our main goal of going in there was just making sure that people did have resources, did have places to go, and did understand their rights, because a lot of them did not understand. They were under the impression that they have to leave tonight and cannot be there tomorrow. Mm. And because of that, so what we did was just explain to them, and some people we really had to explain it, you know, over and over again, so that, because they were convinced, you know, that they had to leave, but they hadn't gone through any kind of process, any kind of core process. And so, to the best of my understanding, I understand that that is a self-help eviction, which would make it illegal.
So that, there's a due process, and there's also a legal process as well. I mean, what's bothering me a lot about this, and you're listening to WCRS 98.3, 102.1, your community station. What's bothering me so much is these people, from what you're saying, some of them sound like they think they're in a, you know, captivity. They think they're that they have no rights because they're poor and vulnerable and elderly or handicapped. Is that they don't have the basic fundamental rights of other citizens. So you going in there really is saying, look, you people have rights, you have worth, you have dignity, and you're entitled to the same due process as other Americans.
And even if that just buys them, it sounds like the process would take between 14, 17 days. It sounds like just buying that amount of time would be huge for them, because not everyone has places to go right now.
And what I would do, well, you know, I worked on a case, Barry Etney, where they were evicting him from his barbershop over on Long Street. And we found that many of his rights were violated. He stayed there 3 years. And the landlord was happy, rent-free for 3 years. And I'm thinking, if these landlords are in any way violating any of the rights of elderly or handicapped people, there should be countersuits and break up their dreamed of force eviction. You know, what is this, the Trail of Tears? You're going to grab neighbors in wheelchairs and force them out into the street in some cases, I suppose, with nowhere really to go. Connie?
Yeah, and so some of what we've learned, Bob, is that the living conditions are not acceptable at Brighton House for a lot of people. We've heard about roaches, bed bugs, other conditions that the residents have complained about, and they may have a cause for putting rent in escrow because they have complained about the conditions of the habitability of the building.
And this may be retaliation for that.
It may be. The other fact that we learned recently was that so the 30-day notice basically gave people until today, Sunday, January 31st, to move out. And tomorrow, February 1st, there's scheduled some kind of day labor to vacate the rest of the possessions from the building. And so the residents are definitely under the impression that that they will be basically thrown out on the street tomorrow. So they, even though, you know, that would not be legal, that would be a self-help eviction. And, you know, it may be the case that they're coming to empty out some of the vacated apartments. People are definitely under the impression that they will be forcibly removed tomorrow.
And their belongings.
And that their belongings will be thrown out on the street. And so, you know, it's really not clear. There's one woman who was in the middle of lining up new housing and may have found a place, so she may be staying at her new place, leave some of her possessions in the old place, and so she may be vulnerable for having her apartment cleared out before she's actually moved out, and that would be completely, totally illegal. So, basically, there are a lot of intimidation tactics. People have been threatened with arrest if they stay past tomorrow, and they've been threatened with having their possessions put out on the street.
And you're saying, from your perspective, that would not be legal?
Unless they go through the complete court process, which includes the 30-day letter, a 3-day notice, a court hearing in front of a judge, and a judgment of eviction, and then a set out by the sheriff, no, that would not be legal. That would be considered a self-help eviction, and that's illegal.
So. All right. Bobby, what do you think the community should do about this potential illegal activity by the new owners of the Brighton House?
I mean, I would, in my opinion, I'm pretty upset about it. You know, I would definitely boycott any any use of that building for this point forward. I know that it's not going to matter, and people that are moving here and have no idea what they're getting into aren't going to know about any of this, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a business, and they'll most likely be very successful and all that, and it's two blocks from my house. It just, I couldn't sit there with it being right around the corner from me, right. and I had to do something about it. So every day we find out a little bit more, and every day we get a little bit more direction with where we're trying to go with this, just between the members of the group.
Are you fairly clear that both of you in this case, that this is to move this facility, to redo it, move it to market rates, and really jack up the rent?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they've already built a gym in there, you know. So it's like...
For wheelchair basketball?
They took out all the common areas. They won't let the people talk to each other anymore. It's just such a blow to... They aren't only extracting them from our community. They've taken away their community, you know. And I understand how capitalism works and everything like that, you know. But
particularly welfare, particularly predatory, kleptomaniac capitalism, because that entire building was really redone with a lot of it tax dollars of the people. So, I mean, they're getting a building with tremendous subsidy. I mean, they're welfare people. That building was created by the community, by the labor trust. And, you know, if it's one thing if they went in there on a free market and, fixed the building up, I'd have a completely different perspective. But they picked this up at auction and ownership after it was fixed up and renovated when it was empty with taxpayers' money and tax credits, people that didn't have to pay tax dollars. So, you know, I mean, I know how capitalists work, but I also know that they're taking our money.
Yeah,
to perpetrate.
And not to mention, they're kicking out elderly people and handicapped people and mentally ill people in the middle of winter. They gave them the eviction notice during the same week as Christmas, and they told them that they had to be out by the 31st.
Yeah, and this really is a life or death situation for a lot of these people. It's very likely that if their relocation isn't successful, that people will suffer health consequences and could even die. So this is going to have a huge impact on the people. It's going to be a huge hardship on these people. To change gears a little bit, Legal Aid Society, Legal Aid has been in to visit some of the residents, and I spoke with the legal aid attorney who had been working on this. He said that that Legal Aid is allowed to represent tenants' unions, and so it seems like for the Old Town East area that tenants' unions might be a good option for protecting the people against greedy landlords. So I think that that's something that is probably needed in our community, and it would even allow Legal Aid to advocate for the people on a broader scale. Right now, the way attorney client relationships work is that usually a client has to reach out to the attorney and retain the attorney. An attorney can't necessarily just go up to clients. It's considered soliciting.
Yeah.
So they can't solicit clients and say, hey, I want to represent you. But if there's a tenants union, if the people actually unionize, then they have a lot more bargaining power against the landlords. It will be harder for the landlords to raise rent. One thing that we found out is, even though the dispatch claimed that rent had not been raised by the new landlord, we found out from the tenants that rents had been raised twice, that people were basically kicked off their Section 8, and that the landlords were, you know, selecting who they would allow to stay longer based on who can pay.
The rent there now is $691. If you saw one of these apartments, it is laughable.
Yeah, $691 is more than I pay for my mortgage on my 3-bedroom home. So, you know, that's pretty expensive, especially for somebody who's low income.
It's also misinforming the press, because in the Dispatch article they said they had no intention of raising any rent.
And I think that was part of their agreement to get the right to... control the building, is that they wouldn't raise any of the existing tenants' rent. So who knows? Maybe they're in violation of the contract, which allows them to move to market rate as these units naturally come up become open. So, you know, when we're looking at this process, it just seems like a blatant attempt, and this has happened in other cities, right?
Of course.
So not only I think the tenant union's idea, I think part of that area, you know, it's I'd love to vote that building and that building only rent controlled.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, if you think about what happened out in California, San Francisco, New York City is, you know, often the landlords become unrestrained when an area is becoming gentrified.
Absolutely. And you mentioned my business. I mean, I could be one of those people that business has to be removed, you know, or I have to remove my business because I can no longer pay rent. You know, that has happened to friends of mine in Brooklyn over and over again. Yeah. They've set up shop, kept having to move in one direction out of where the area that they helped create. And
So I think a tenants union would particularly make sense for this group because it is low income and disabled people. You know, that would be a good thing. The other thing that I would point out is that the new managers of this building, they are from out of state. And so this becomes kind of a community issue of, you know, we have out
and
of state
perhaps a cultural
people,
issue. Do we know where they're from?
Yeah, a cultural issue. I'm not sure. But, you know, it's really disheartening to see some people coming from outside of our community trying to come and exploit the land, exploit the people, extract money from the people and extract wealth from our community and potentially even take it out of state.
And as far as anyone that is trying to see the positive side of this, as far as investment of their own and whatever, you know, I don't feel particularly radical trying to protect old people from getting kicked out of their home overnight.
In the middle of winter.
Yeah.
In January.
Like, this is more of a human issue that, I mean, I don't know how people could even ignore. So,
and Connie, if somebody hears this, how can they get a hold of you, your firm?
Yes, our firm is Fitrakis and Goodell Newton Attorneys at Law. We're located at 1021 East Broad Street, right in Old Town East. And you can reach us at 614-307-9783. Or send us an email at fgnlegal@gmail.com. That's FGN as in Fitrakis and Goodell Newton, legal@gmail.com.
Yeah, what I find so positive about this is usually the way the you know, Columbus works in most areas is people want to move in the neighborhoods where everyone has the exact same wallet and bank account size and doesn't value the social economic diversity. So many thanks to your group. Does your group have a name, Bobby?
No, a group of concerned neighbors.
Concerned neighbors.
And what were you going to say?
Oh, I just, I don't know.
Thank you
for having us here. I was just going to say you know, we lose our culture. We lose, you know, just... what we're used to being around, you know. I like this area because it reminds me of Highland Square in Akron, and that was an incredibly diverse area, and that's what I call home. That's what's home for me, so that's what I'm used to.
Any last thoughts, Connie?
I love the neighborhood. I love Old Town East and the people that I've met here in the past about 6 years that I've lived here. I feel very fortunate to have... to have the best neighbors on the planet that I can think of. I'm very happy about the community that I've moved into, and I hate to see people treated this way because they're vulnerable, because of their disabilities, because they're poor, because they're people of color. I love the diversity of the neighborhood, and Old Town East has a great character, in part because it's a historically black and black middle class neighborhood. It's something that we're really lucky to have in Columbus.
All right. Thank you, Connie Goodell Newton, and thank you, Bobby Silver at Yellow Brick Pizza. Great pizza, by the way. It's Bob Strangis bringing you the other side of the news and saying, let's fight back. Let them know we have different values here in Columbus, Ohio, and in Old Town East.